Welcome back. This is Disc 3 of the Convergence CD series, in which we're finally going to take all the different areas of information that we've been talking about and tie them all together so that you can have some kind of a unified perspective of how the different pieces of information that we've been sharing all unify into one continuous model of human evolution, in which you will see in this disc that we are not the pinnacle of evolution for what we can attain, but rather we are at a stage of evolution. And this evolution has happened before in our historical record insofar as the changes in DNA that we're going to be seeing. But more importantly, there is a change happening now, and a change that could affect us on a far more biological level and spiritual level than any of us may have ever dared to imagine. So I hope that by this point you've been listening to the previous two CDs in the series in sequence and have come to this point now where you've had the information that we've already been sharing in your brain in some way or another. Again, I'd like to say I'm David Wilcock, and if you haven't heard anything from me before, then welcome. And also, the music that you're hearing in the background has been composed by 9-time Grammy Award winner Larry Sire. And he and I have collaborated on the production of this music so as to bring you something that matches very nicely with the message that we have to share and with the words. So I hope you enjoy it. So let's give a brief overview of some of the main points that we've been touching on throughout this CD series thus far. That way you can bring yourself up to speed and be able to jump right in with me for where we're about to go. Back to Disc 1, we primarily focused on the work of Cleve Baxter with his book now that he's written called Primary Perception: The Biocommunication with Plants, Living Foods, and Human Cells. And Deepak Chopra said, Cleve Baxter's research has profound implications for humanity and its future evolution. I'm personally grateful and indebted to Cleve for leading the way. Someday all of humanity will acknowledge their gratitude to this great pioneer. So what did Cleve Baxter do? He took a plant and hooked it up to a lie detector test, a polygraph as it's called, and discovered that when he wanted to burn the plant with a match, that the plant had a sudden shock reaction. And he was able to continue to get these types of results through things as diverse as chicken eggs and yogurt and even human cells. He ran people's cells from their cheek, which he would get off of a cotton swab through an autoclave, which separates out the white blood cells, and then put the white blood cells in a tiny little test tube of about 1 milliliter volume with tiny little gold wires to hook up to the polygraph so that they would go through the cells. And then he had a laboratory assistant who actually had to take an airline flight and had a series of frustrating events like missing his turn and having trouble at the desk and so forth. And he was very careful to document all the different times that problems were going on and exactly when they were occurring. 300 miles away, his cells were showing shock reactions perfectly in line with when these shocks were happening on the lie detector test. So what that seems to be suggesting is that consciousness broadcasts itself almost like a beacon, and we have no real way of knowing if there's any limit to how far that beacon is going to go. So then as we started to move more into the content of the second disc, at the end of the first and into the second, I brought up to you the work of what is known as the Maharishi Effect, or the Invincible Defense Technology, from the group that brings you Transcendental Meditation, continues to do so. The study that I brought to you, which continues to fascinate me, and I'll be happy to read a little bit of again, shows that even with the level of skepticism that we have in the world about new technologies involving consciousness and matter and biology interacting, we have a very useful technology, which is simply bringing people together in transcendental meditation, or I would assume in other disciplines of meditation that would work as well if somebody was trained. And when you do that, you get a significant decrease in the overall amount of problems on the earth. For 2 months, a group assembled in Israel in 1983, and when the number of participants in this group was high, the war deaths in the neighboring country of Lebanon dropped by 76%. Other possible causes, including weekends, holidays, and weather, were statistically controlled for. This was published in the Journal of Conflict Resolution, Volume 32, pages 776 to 812 in the year 1988. There were 7 more experiments done over a 2-year period during the peak of the Lebanon War thereafter. The results of these interventions included a 71% decrease in war-related fatalities, people dying in war that decreased by 71%. So think about all the guns that are firing bullets, all the people who want to pull the trigger and shoot somebody. And by having a group of people together and meditating, all these people who think that they're only making free will decisions based on nothing more than their own mind are somehow moving into a zone where they don't have the emotional desire to commit those crimes anymore. Very, very fascinating stuff. If you start thinking about the implications of it, then it really shows how far our consciousness affects the earth. War-related injuries in this study fell by 68%, level of conflict overall dropped by 48%, and cooperation among the antagonists increased by 66%. The likelihood that these combined results were due to chance is less than 1 part in 10 to the 19th power, meaning 10 with 19 zeros after it, making this effect of reducing societal or social stress and conflict the most rigorously established phenomenon in the history of the social sciences, as put in the Journal of Social Behavior and Personality. Now, that's just Lebanon. So what does that say about the rest of the world? Well, if you remember, there was an analysis of data compiled by the RAND Corporation based on 3 large assemblies of people. This was a study dealing with Israel and the neighboring country of Lebanon, but what happens about the rest of the world? Is it possible that there could be a worldwide effect? Well, the next study that is detailed here was compiled by the RAND Corporation, summarizing the effect of 3 different large assemblies of people, optimally around 7,000 or more, who would gather together to meditate for world peace. They found that there was an overall 72% reduction in worldwide terrorism as compared to all other weeks during a 2-year period where this was being done. The study ruled out the possibility that this reduction in terrorism was due to cycles, trends, or any drifts in the measurements used or to changes in the seasons. And this was published in the Journal of Offender Rehabilitation. It also was able to get to a workable state in Washington, D.C., a group that increased from 800 to 4,000 people over a 2-month period. And although crime had been steadily increasing prior to that time, once they started doing this, it began decreasing and continued dropping until the end of the experiment with a maximum decrease of 23.6%. The likelihood this could be attributed to chance variation in the levels of crime was less than 2 parts per billion. The drop in crime could not be attributed to other possible causes, including temperature, precipitation, weekends, police and community anti-crime activities. A study of 160 U.S. cities found increases in the numbers of transcendental meditation participants in these cities over a 7-year period were followed by reductions in the crime rate. The study used data from the FBI Uniform Crime Index and controlled for other variables known to affect crime. So that's pretty simple. It means that if you just try to do the meditation, if you try to do your part, then there is a noticeable effect in the area near you. the city that you might be near in the overall amount of crime. This also happened in Manila, New Delhi, Puerto Rico, and Washington, D.C., in which there were statistically significant declines in violent crime. Alternative explanations were explored and could not account for these findings. That was again published in the Journal of Mind and Behavior, Volume 8, in 1987. So, then we started to talk about the technology of the pyramids. But we're talking about Russians who were building their own pyramids after the fall of the Soviet Empire post-1991. They still had their facilities, but they were only living on $30 a month. And they said, hey, we're very interested in the work of Nikolai Kozarev, this guy in the 50s who everybody knows in Russia. He was a major pioneer in the Russian space race and actually invented several different things that were widely used in the Russian space program, made discoveries related to the idea that the moon could be mined for fuel, etc. But he also went off into this fringe area that most people still don't know about, in which he discovered that you could measure a noticeable impulse of energy by doing things as simple as breaking an object or moving an object through space, or moving your head, or turning over an hourglass filled with sand. All these different things would factor together to create a noticeable impulse. And the impulse could be measured on a variety of things, including mechanical detectors that he built, which would be able to show a noticeable change on a needle. So you could have the needle point towards the source of the torsion fields. And there were also non-mechanical detectors, which I gave you on the previous CDs. Now, before we go back into the Russian pyramid research, let me tell you one more thing that I deliberately held back until now from Kozarev's study, which is quite fascinating. Kozarev had built a device which allows you to measure the amount of torsion fields, these energies, which spiral. The word torsion means spiral. And it seems to be the energy of consciousness, and we're going to get into that right now. He built the device that could measure these torsion fields and had it just sitting in his laboratory and operating. It requires you to have two different types of vibration going on at the same time for the needle. And this is described in my book. It's a very, very sensitive needle. And he was reading the story of Faust being tempted by the devil Mephistopheles, which was his favorite story. Just sitting back in the laboratory, not really thinking about anything, reading the story of Faust and getting excited about it, enjoying himself. He reached a point of peak excitation, just like what you'd expect when the guy who had his cells 300 miles away makes a wrong turn and freaks out in his car. Kozarev's sitting there in the laboratory, freaks out because he reads Faust and the temptation from the devil, and the needle on his torsion field detector points towards him. That's right. The needle pointed towards him, which showed that in that moment he had suddenly generated a much higher torsion field signal that was detectable by a mechanical device. If you're interested in more of this, the Convergence series that I've written, including Divine Cosmos and the upcoming volume Divine Nature, goes into detail about this. So we're seeing that it can be generated mechanically, but we're also seeing that it can be generated without mechanics at all. It can be generated by consciousness. So now, fast forward to 1991, the Russians have had their former Soviet Union collapse, and they're still in possession of these laboratory facilities and the resources in which to conduct experimentation. So they had these giant pyramids built that were very steep. They had a 70-degree slope angle, whereas the Great Pyramid is only a 51-degree angle. So these pyramids look almost more like obelisks than pyramids. And it's just a shell. It's just a framework of fiberglass and PVC tubing, and there's no metal in it. And you can walk inside, there's a door in there, and then when you go inside, it just looks like a really, really tall, narrow building. And they were able to do a whole series of experiments, and I'm going to overview some of those with you again. The first one involved the drug venoglobulin, a naturally occurring virus-fighting compound in human beings. When they put the virus-fighting compound diluted into a concentration of 50 micrograms per milliliter and stored it in the pyramid for a time, it became approximately 3,000% more effective at fighting viruses. Premature babies were given a milliliter of water from the pyramid, nothing more. And if they were sick, their health was seen to increase to a practically normal level. Living organisms were tested inside the pyramid, in this case, laboratory mice. When they were given typhoid fever virus, which would normally kill 93% of all the mice in the control group outside the pyramid, when you put the mice inside the pyramid, 60% of them lived and survived. And even when you gave them a really high dose where 97% of all the mice would die, only 3% surviving, in the pyramid, 30% would still survive. Carcinogens, cancer-causing agents, the control group of mice were just drinking ordinary water. The experimental group were drinking water that came from the pyramid. These mice drinking pyramid water had significantly fewer tumors developed than the mice drinking the ordinary water. And it goes on from there, including the fact, as we were saying, that there was a column of unknown energy measured at a width of 500 meters and a height of 2,000 meters in a larger circle that was 300 kilometers wide, measured by Dr. Golod's team. And he figured out that if you generated this energy electromagnetically, all the various power plants in Russia's energy would need to be combined to make something this size. And even more interestingly, an ozone hole over that area of Russia had repaired itself in only 2 months of time from this. Furthermore, oil production increased by 30% if you build the pyramid over the oil well. So if we're having wars in the Middle East right now, dealing with a resource crisis, not having enough oil, and you can build something that's very low technology, very cheap, and increase your yield in an oil production facility by 30%, and then you start thinking about all these sludgy old oil fields that we have in the United States that are sitting there and unable to produce anymore. If you build pyramids over them, might you be able to get oil out of them for the first time in many years? It's very likely. You can get a 20 to 100% increase in the yield of agricultural seeds if they're stored in the pyramid between 1 to 5 days before you plant them. Another study actually showed a 400% increase in seed fertility. Poisons and other toxins become less destructive to a living system even after a short time in the pyramid. Radioactive materials decay more rapidly than expected. Pathogenic viruses and bacteria become significantly less damaging to life after being held in the pyramid. Psychotropic drugs, including LSD, have less of an effect on people who are either staying inside the pyramid or nearby the pyramid. So if you give somebody a psychoactive drug and then you put them near the pyramid, the effects of the drug decrease. Their mind balances out. Well, think about that one for a second. If your consciousness balances out, even though you've been given a drug that supposedly changes it, does that indicate that your consciousness is simply something in the brain? And if 7,000 people can meditate in one area and the whole world's level of terrorism decreases by 72%, does that indicate that your consciousness is just something inside your own brain? And then as we go on to the results of Dr. Yuri Bogdanov from the TTR Institute in Kharkiv, Ukraine, he built a 12-meter pyramid and was able to increase productivity of wheat by 400% in the Romansko settlement of Moscow. The half-life of radioactive carbon was shortened, meaning that the radioactivity went away. Salts crystallized in different patterns. Concrete became stronger. Crystals exhibited different optical behaviors, such as becoming clearer. Rabbits and white rats gained 200% more endurance and higher concentrations of white blood cells. Water underneath the pyramid would be purified. Diamonds that were synthesized in the pyramid would turn out harder and purer than they would otherwise. And then teams from the Russian National Academy of Science discovered that earthquakes would become less frequent. Instead of getting one large and powerful earthquake, you'd have several hundred tiny ones. So it seems that the pyramids are dissipating the energetic buildup and friction in the earth that would normally create a sudden violent earthquake. The atmosphere nearby the pyramid would also be shielded from severe weather, causing an overall decrease in the amount of violent weather patterns which seem to be deflected around the area that the pyramid is located in. and quantities of salt and pepper were stored inside the pyramid and later removed and fed to about 5,000 people in certain select jails in Russia. Amazingly, within a few months, there was a dramatic improvement in their behavior, and most of the criminal behavior almost completely disappeared, whereas the jails that were given normal salt and pepper showed no signs of behavioral change. Nothing in the jails under study had changed except that the salt and pepper was being secretly added to their food. So, when we start to get this overview and we see the difference between what is going on in most people's acceptance of science with what we're seeing in the new science, consciousness becomes far more integrated into the collective. We also talked about DNA and how in the presence of loving energy, the DNA molecule unwinds, whereas in the presence of negative or angry energy, the DNA molecule contracts. Well, guess what? If you want your body to heal itself, your DNA has to be able to unwind so that the messenger RNA can get in there, grab the code, and bring it where it needs to go. If you don't give your body the instructions on how to heal, how can you expect it to heal? So this gets into mind-body medicine, how different parts of your body are going to clamp up that DNA depending on your spiritual issue. So the body becomes a feedback mechanism to tell you the issues that you're working on spiritually. You can find out more about that if you read books by Louise Hay, talking about the notion of an inner child that is in need of healing and how that wounded inner child then manifests in a variety of different health contexts. The basic rule of thumb here is that you look at that part of the body and what that part of the body does for you and see how that acts as a metaphor for a spiritual issue. So if there's a problem with one of the eyes, what are you not seeing? If there's a problem with one of the ears, what is it that you don't want to hear? If there's a problem with the nervous system or the ability to touch, what is it that makes you want to shut down your feelings? Traditionally, the liver is associated with anger. Kidneys are associated with fear. Thyroid problems, including weight problems, are associated with not being able to speak your truth. Lungs are associated with grief. The heart is obviously associated with matters of the heart. Stomach problems can be associated with not being able to stomach something. Problems with the uterine or genital area have to do with the sexual issues, etc. So it becomes important for people to look beyond simply drugging a problem away and treating it as if it's a disease with no further pathology to it. The ancient metaphysical traditions, the ancient wisdom teachings, all say the same thing. Your physical health and the health of the earth are part of a unified system of consciousness, a system that reflects back to your body on the individual level and our collective earth body on the planetary level. What's wrong with us? So the physical problems are manifestations of spiritual problems. Your body manifests your spiritual problems in conditions of dis-ease or ill health, and the world manifests these problems with earthquakes, landslides, typhoons, tornadoes, hurricanes, tsunamis, volcanic eruptions, the whole gamut of problems that we see on the earth. The basic model that I've come up with, to put it in very simple terms, is that energy is constantly streaming into the Earth's core, which is a function of gravity, and as it continues doing so, the Earth gradually increases in its physical size. And this actually explains what's been called continental drift. If you shrink the Earth down to 55% of its current size, then all the continents fit together like a nice little jigsaw puzzle. And in fact, people who have studied the expansion of the Earth show that that model is the only model that truly accounts for all the anomalies of how the continents got to be where they are and the timelines for the spreading of the seafloors. So the Earth is continuing to expand in size, and each of us as a human being acts as a lens or a filter through which the energy going into the Earth has to pass through. So when we feel anger, when we feel strife, when we feel tension, we're clamping up the Earth's grid in that area. We're clamping up the energy streaming into the Earth. And it creates a low pressure zone. And that low pressure zone acts just like it does in a weather system. If you create a zone of low pressure, then higher pressure comes in to fill it up. Some of the energy from the Earth's core bubbles out, and when it bubbles out, it creates cataclysmic activity, either in the form of earthquakes or volcanoes. Again, for those who are scientifically minded, I'm giving an extremely simplified explanation of this. This is not intended to stand on its own. It does require you to read more about what I'm saying in order to really understand it. But the basic point is this. The Russian pyramid studies show that Earth changes are a direct energetic function because if you do something as simple as build a pyramid on a given spot, you can substantially decrease the earthquake activity, you can heal the ozone layer, you can get rid of radioactivity, you can purify the water, you can pump out more oil, you can help people to become happier, more harmonious, seeds will grow faster, you can cure cancer, you can reduce disease and ailments, etc., etc. All of these things that are friendly to life, friendly to consciousness, happen as a result of the increased etheric energy or torsion field energy that is generated by building a pyramid on a given spot, which acts like a needle of light, as if you're doing acupuncture on the Earth's grid itself. And of course, to tie back in with the Maharishi effect, or the invincible defense technology, as it has also been called, you can do this without having to build a pyramid. Just by getting a large group of people together, 7,000 people, can reduce worldwide terrorism by 72%. Seems to work a lot better than dropping bombs on people and thinking that that's going to solve any problems. Now, what we're really going to be dealing with here in the last few minutes of this CD, before we go into a guided meditation, is how what's happening to us right now is much more than just learning how not to have war in the world, learning how to have peace. We're talking about evolution. You may not be aware of the fact that the Darwinian model of evolution, which has been around for well over 100 years now, is flat wrong. And in fact, there are an increasing number of academics who are coming out and boldly saying that evolution can't be proven to be true the way that it is now, which is gradual mutation. I'm going to read you a couple quotes from leaders in science who have come out with quotes that are against evolution. Quote number one. Evolutionism is a fairy tale for grown-ups. This theory has helped nothing in the progress of science. It is useless. Next quote. I myself am convinced that the theory of evolution will be one of the great jokes in the history books of the future. We will marvel that so very flimsy and dubious an idea could be accepted with the incredible credulity that it has. Next quote. Scientists who utterly reject evolution may be one of our fastest growing controversial minorities. Many of the scientists supporting this position hold impressive credentials in science. Next quote. Scientists who go about teaching that evolution is a fact of life are great con men, and the story they are telling may be the greatest hoax ever. In explaining evolution, we do not have one iota of fact. What do they mean by that? Beginning about 600 million years ago, this is another quote now, beginning about 600 million years ago, all over the world at roughly the same time, thick sequences of rocks, barren of any easily detectable fossils, are suddenly overlain by sediments containing a gorgeous array of shelly invertebrates, trilobites, brachiopods, mollusks. Creationists have made much of this sudden development of a rich and varied fossil record where just before there was none. This does pose a fascinating intellectual challenge. Next quote. The geological record has so far provided no evidence as to the origin of the fishes. Next quote. There are no intermediate forms between finned fish and limbed reptilian creatures in the fossil collections of the world. Next quote. There is no fossil evidence of the stages through which the remarkable change from reptile to bird was achieved. Next quote. It must be significant that nearly all the evolutionary stories I learned as a student have now been debunked. And the next quote. If man evolved from an ape-like creature, he did so without leaving any trace of that evolution in the fossil record. Next quote. The entire hominid or ape-man fossil collection known today would barely cover a billiard table. The remarkable fact is that all the physical evidence we have for human evolution can still be placed with room to spare inside a single coffin. Modern apes, for instance, seem to have sprung out of nowhere. They have no yesterday, no fossil record. And the true origin of modern humans, of upright, naked, tool-making, big-brained beings, is to be honest with ourselves in an equally mysterious manner. The next piece of information that I find very significant comes from two University of Chicago paleontologists, David Rope and James Sepkoski. And Rope and Sepkoski created the largest collection of fossils from the ocean, marine fossils. Over 36,000 different genres of life. Now, you know there's a genus and a species. So genres refer to multiple genuses, or genres, as they're called. So they collected over 36,000 different genres of marine fossils. And they started to notice an interesting pattern. The evolution of these fossils all over the world would spontaneously jump up every 26 million years. And this effect goes back 10 times in a row. One of those times includes the fall of the dinosaurs. And in fact, the last time it happened was exactly 13 million years ago, or half of one of these 26 million year cycles. So by now you must be asking me, what in the world would cause sudden spontaneous evolutions of all life on Earth in these neat little cycles of time, 26 million years? What could possibly be doing that? Well, I want to bring in the next piece of information, which is so fascinating that it's almost beyond imagination. Dr. Peter Garyev, the same guy, if you remember, who did the DNA phantom effect and showed that you could put DNA in a tube and it would gather up all the light in a spiral, and then you take the DNA out, for up to 30 days afterwards, the DNA would act as if it was still there, and the light would continue spiraling as if it was still there. This is the same scientist, okay? Dr. Garyev, more recently, has done a study in which he shined a laser light, not a burning or hurtful laser, but just a regular laser light, onto a developing salamander embryo, and then took the light from that salamander embryo and redirected it towards a frog embryo. You with me so far? You take a laser light, you shine it into a salamander embryo, you redirect the light from the salamander into the frog embryo. So you're picking up the DNA vibration. Now, an embryo has cells that are reproducing very quickly. Why don't you take a guess as to what happened to the frog embryo? Frog embryo totally mutated into a salamander's embryo and grew into a regular adult salamander that was indistinguishable from another salamander. There was nothing left behind to indicate that the genetic material that created it had been frog. It was a salamander. It could sexually reproduce with other salamanders, leaving behind no trace of its original genetic origin. If you've ever wondered what in the world is the duck-billed platypus, this could answer the question. You can take the DNA vibration from one creature and shine it into another creature and get a substantially different creature coming out. This was also performed by Dr. Dzang Kangeng. In this experiment, he used a microwave generator and had two rooms. One room had a duck inside. The other room had a hen inside, a hen that was pregnant with eggs inside her womb. So he shines the microwave onto the duck and then has a room that's specially designed to gather up those waves and redirect them into the second room. And after 5 days of having the duck in the one room and the hen in the other room, he takes the hen out and waits for the hen to lay its eggs. What do you think comes out of those eggs? Well, they're not baby chickens anymore. They were duck hens. That's right, they were half chicken, half duck. They had elongated beaks. Normally, chickens have no skin between their toes. These chickens had webbing between their feet. Their internal organs grew larger. Some of the feathers started to change color. There was a whole entire change in the way that the baby chicks looked. So when you start thinking about this happening in 26 million year intervals of time and that we're exactly halfway through the cycle again, there's a strong consideration that something could be happening like that again. So what was the big thing that was required in both of these experiments, both the experiments of Garayev and the experiments of Kangeng? Both experiments required a great source of energy. In Garayev's experiment, the great source of energy was a laser, which is very concentrated light. And in Kangeng's experiment, the great source of energy was a 2 gigahertz microwave generator. So in either case, what you're doing is sending DNA information as a wave from one creature to another and thus creating genetic changes without any of the normal complications associated with gene splicing and cloning. You get changes in the DNA. I'm suggesting that even though we're only halfway through this 26 million year cycle, those cycles themselves are caused by energy changes in the galaxy. There are zones of energy in the galaxy that we move through in certain units of time, and the geometry of these energy fields has now become twice as dense, meaning that we're moving through each layer at twice the speed than we were before, because there's twice as many layers. So whereas normally 26 million years is, say, for just a given frame of reference, we'll say 26 million years is 2 inches of space. So for every 2 inches of space, there's now 1 unit of time. Now for every 1 inch of space, there's a unit of time. So this means zones of energy. Look at it like you have a pie, and you cut the pie up into different pieces. For each piece of the pie, you have a different concentration of energy, and this energy is directly responsible for how the life looks on Earth, for what level of evolution we're at. So when we start talking about interplanetary climate change, one of the studies that we now know for a fact is that we've had more solar activity in the last 40 years than the previous 8,000 years combined. That, in turn, is driving all the other planets, such that between 1975 and 2001, Venus has become 2,500% brighter. The entire Pacific Ocean seafloor has had a significant warming all over between 1985 and 1999. Mars has experienced global warming, huge storms, and a melting of its polar ice caps between 1975 and 2001. Jupiter is undergoing a substantial global warming, over a 200% increase in the brightness of the clouds around it between 1979 and 1995. Saturn has had a 1,000% increase in the thickness of a tube of energy surrounding it between 81 and 93. Uranus has had, quote, really big, big changes in its brightness and cloud activity between 1986 to 99. Neptune has become 40% brighter between 1996 and 2002. And Pluto's atmospheric pressure has increased by 300% between 1989 and 2002. Every single one of these things that I just read you is validated NASA-funded study. It's just that nobody in the media is combining all this information together. So that sounds like a pretty increased source of energy to me. It sounds like we have the strong energy. It's changing the whole cosmos. It's changing our whole solar system, amplifying the energy, causing plants to become brighter, to become hotter, to become more magnetic. And it's also pushing us through a collective initiation. Our DNA right now is undergoing a gradual change, which probably in a matter of a few generations will push us into a whole new form of evolution for humanity, which may include such things as the ability to levitate objects or levitate ourselves as easy as if we're breathing, to have instantaneous telepathic communication with everyone around ourselves, to be able to do instantaneous healing of ourselves and of other people, and to basically live in a world that is far, far more harmonious than the one we have now. I understand that for some of you this is going to sound very speculative and over the top, but really, when you start thinking about this science, when you start thinking about the things that we've been sharing here today, and all the things you've been learning, is it really that much of a stretch to see that this could happen? The paranormal abilities have also been studied in the laboratory, such as the Russian psychic Nina Kalagina. You may have heard about the fact that the objects that she was able to move with her mind were being studied by the Russians, and they found that there were energy fields around the objects that pulsated in tune with her breathing rate and her heart rate and her brainwave patterns. So this science is no joke. There will be coming more and more people into the world who will have anomalous cognition abilities, such as what I have. It's part of a trend that's increasing. And you can help increase that trend yourself. You can help participate in this so-called ascension process. It's not just about indigo children or Blu-ray children coming in, as many people have called them. And the children just have the greater abilities, but we don't. Your DNA is alive now. It is active now. It's responding to the conditions in the world. It's responding to the greater zone of energy in the galaxy that we're now moving into. Your DNA is part of who you are. Your DNA is part of your consciousness. And this energy is increasing consciousness. In fact, another study I found has showed that people's IQ has been rising so much that every 15 years they have to keep changing the test to make it harder to hit a 100, which is considered average. So if you look at society and you look at the progression of technology that's been going on in society, it's easy to see that the Industrial Revolution in the last 300, 200 years has had a remarkable impact on how much information the average person is exposed to on any given day, on our level of technology and sophistication, at least in that sense, the sense of the things that we build, the technology that's available to us, the machines that we have available to us, etc. So now what's happening in the world is something that I would call a collective initiation, not a prophecy of doom and disaster, of massive earth changes that are going to kill us, but rather we are being given an opportunity to see our shadow side, to see the part of ourselves that has existed outside of love and happiness and truth, the part of ourselves that believes in sorrow and misery and pain, the part of ourselves that has felt as if the Creator has abandoned us, as if we've been left alone in the universe, nobody cares, nobody reaches out to us. We're stumbling around the darkness, reaching for something we don't even know what it is. It's okay if you want to feel that way. It's not going to necessarily hurt anybody, unless you understand, of course, how your thoughts are blending with all the other thoughts. So wouldn't it be nicer to focus on the positive and begin harnessing this technology today? If more people signing up for transcendental meditation can decrease crime in their respective cities, and over 160 cities in the U.S. showed this, as well as cities around the world, then wouldn't it make sense that for you, in your own way, however you feel it appropriate, could seek a meditative practice, that you would help us move into this place in the world in which our DNA is going to be allowed to spontaneously evolve more and more, just like it has in the past, in which in a very short period of time, species that have been on the Earth before suddenly change and a new species arises? What could constitute an evolutionary leap for humanity that's at the same level of intensity of fish getting out of the oceans and becoming land animals? Think about that. Is it possible that we could experience and are experiencing a level of evolution now that is on that kind of level of significance? And then, if it's true that that could happen, what are the signs of what that new evolution might be like? I believe that it's going to have more and more to do with love. The reason why I say this ties back in with Dr. Glenn Rhine's study. It was love that expanded the DNA molecule. It was love that was an active energy source that caused DNA to unwind so that you can heal yourself. It is love in the meditative state that lowers worldwide terrorism by 72%. So there is some validity to the idea of a critical mass, that if enough people can begin so-called vibrating at a higher frequency, that we could create a new world, create a new vision for humanity. This is one of the most important levels of this so-called ascension process that I'm teaching. This is what I want you to gain from having heard this CD series. There are very real changes going on in the solar system. They can be measured and scientifically documented. I could give you a lot more data on that, but we're not going there right now. We're just going to focus on how it affects you. And this brings us at last to our meditative process. I've given you an enormous amount of information to think about, to focus on. Now what I'd like to do is to start using this technology, because you're a human being listening to this. You're on the Earth, and the Earth needs our help. So if you can join with me now, and with the music that you're going to be hearing in the background, and are hearing in the background, let's move together to a space in which we can create a new world. Let's move together into a space where we can create the coherence of the heart that will help to bring about the very change that we've discussed here today. For this change that's coming and is here now is bringing us through a collective initiation. It looks pretty bad. It's called the Dark Night of the Soul. It's supposed to look bad. It's supposed to look scary. It's supposed to look like we might lose everything, but that's precisely what we need to awaken from. We need to awaken to the changes that are happening. We need to awaken if we want to survive, because otherwise the mirroring effect on the Earth with these earthquakes and volcanoes is very destructive. We can move through this, and you can help. You can help today, right now, by taking part in this guided meditation that we're about to do on this CD. However, before we do it, I want to make one thing extremely clear so that we don't have any problems, okay? If you are driving a car or operating any type of heavy machinery right now, it really is important that you turn off the CD and let go of listening to this and save it for a time that you're not driving. With the combination of the way that I will use my voice, which is basically hypnotic, and the music that we're going to have in the background, and do have in the background, it can have an effect that could make you possibly be a danger to yourself or to others. So right now, if this is where you are, if you're in the car and you're holding onto the steering wheel and you're looking at the road, then we're done. And thanks a lot, and let's talk more about this meditation when you get back home. If you are with us and you're not driving a car, then let's proceed. Okay, are you ready? Let's see how you can help. Let's see how you can help the earth by allowing yourself to breathe deeply now. And moving more and more into a state of true gratifying relaxation. You can feel the relaxation as a warm, tingly sensation in your toes, and you can wiggle those toes. Ah, isn't it nice to feel that relaxation flowing? Isn't it nice to feel it flowing over the soles of your feet, over the tops of your feet? The relaxation climbing up through your ankles, the lower parts of your leg, through your calves, as if you're walking into a brilliant lake of light, very slowly. A luminous liquid light, taking nice, deep, healing breaths, moving more and more into a state of gratitude. For in Dr. Ryan's research, gratitude was the number one word that he found to be most applicable to the changes in DNA. Imagine this liquid light continuing to rise up your legs as we bring in the work of Dr. Masaru Emoto, who showed that when people feel love and then you freeze water in that same area, the love energy causes the water to form beautiful crystals, whereas hateful and discordant energy only causes the water to look ugly and gloppy. We don't want any of that ugly and gloppy energy in our energy field. We want the crystallization. Just like the pyramid could do, making salts crystallize better, making concrete harder, making diamonds synthesized in the pyramid harder. What about the crystallization of our chakras, the energy centers of the body in the ancient tradition? We can crystallize those as well. We can rise the energy all the way from our feet, all the way up our legs, through the groin area, relaxing every muscle, all the way through. Up the waist, up our abdomen, we can poke our fingers now into that wonderful, pillowy, smooth water, liquid light. You can wiggle your fingers now a little bit, feel that light moving through. Feel it moving up your arms as you go deeper and deeper into the water now. Moving on up your chest until it moves up to the level of your neck. And this water you can breathe in. You can breathe underwater. There's no fear. You allow yourself to glide into the water now, over the neck, feeling the relaxation move up the back of your head, massaging out all those sore spots that were once there. Over the top of your head, that funny pain that you get behind your eyes is just drifting away. This is your sacred space right now, a time for you to relax, to feel the gratitude, the peace. Every muscle in your face is relaxing. You feel relaxation in your teeth, in your gums, in your tongue, visualizing healing energy, moving through any problem you might have in the teeth, in the mouth, moving through any problem you might have in your head, whether it's congestion or headaches, moving through your skeletal system, healing any problems you might have in your back, in your joints that are sore, in your hips, in the knees, in the ankles, in the toes, the fingers, the wrists, the elbows. You can feel the energy moving through your muscular system, any points that continue to be sore in the back or in your arms, your forearms, your legs, your stomach muscles. You can see this energy moving through your skin, healing the skin of any problems that might exist. Have any issues with the skin that have been bothering you or that concern you, the healing light, thrilling every cell in your body so that it glides on higher and higher levels of fascination with the wonder of this universe. Moving through your vital organs, strengthening your heart so that it beats with pride and with love. Strengthening your lungs that you may breathe deeply, clearly, cleanly. Moving through your stomach that you may digest your food well, through the pancreas that you may have the enzymes you need, through the gallbladder that it may store those enzymes as needed, if you still have a gallbladder. Through the kidneys, through the liver, through the eliminative systems, through the small intestine, large intestine, all the organ systems of the body, the thyroid gland, the other endocrine glands, all being bathed in living light. Isn't it nice to feel that sense of peace? Isn't it nice to feel the smooth, velvety softness of the energy that just wraps you up as if you were in a nice, warm, cushiony blanket of light? Listen to the music now and snuggle in this blanket for a moment. Think about the embryo of the frog, and through nothing more than a laser beam that contained the torsion field energy from the DNA of the salamander, that frog changed into a salamander. The energy that changes you is in the room with you right now, because we're moving into that energy in the cosmos, in the galaxy. The laser is shining on you now as you breathe this light through your body. Do you want to accept the energy that can help you evolve right now into something beyond who you were before? If the answer is yes, then allow that energy now to flow into you, expanding your consciousness. So that even if you were on a drug that might otherwise alter your mind in a way that you didn't want, those effects can go away. You can breathe out any cancer, any dis-ease, any sense of imbalance. And keep returning time after time to your healing. The same healing that 7,000 people meditating can bring to the whole world to reduce terrorism by 72%. Let's reduce the inner conflict in yourself. I know there's probably someone in your life who you've had disagreements with, either now or in the past. And I know that probably there is some forgiveness that you still need to do there. Recognize that they were only acting on behalf of the experiences they had leading up to you. And they weren't even really doing this to you, they're doing this to themselves. Remember, I talked about projection and how we project our own shadow self onto others. They weren't really hurting you, they were seeing something in you that reminded them of something in themselves they didn't like, and that's what made them angry. That's what made them mistreat you. I know some horrible things have happened to you. I know you've suffered. I know you've cried. I know you've spent nights in bed, alone, wrapping your arms around yourself, desperately seeking an answer. I know it's not easy to be human. To live in this world, to be a part of this reality. And I know that that pain comes about from a feeling as if you've been left behind. as if you've been left alone. If you need to let yourself cry now, it's okay. Just let it go. It is very hard. I know that. I know it's hard. Let the emotions flow through you. Let yourself grieve if you need to. Honor the fact that you've been angry, that you've been frustrated, that you've had emotions that are much more ferocious than you might ever want to believe you would feel. And let all those emotions flow back into the pool of peace, this beautiful healing light that now envelops you and surrounds you. Let that emotion flow away. You've been carrying this burden for a long time, dear traveler. Let it go. Visualize the entire world flowing into light, encompassing every cell of the human energy field. The body that connects us all, just like the cells 300 miles away from the donor, still responding to his consciousness. We are all part of that body. We are all cells in the body of the earth. In this moment, radiate your consciousness to the earth. Radiate your consciousness to those who are in need of healing and love. Visualize the inhumanities decreasing. Visualize people smiling, loving each other, happy. Even if just for a little while that cynicism and that sarcasm can let go, people can take it easy, relax a little bit, enjoy themselves, cultivate peace. Peace doesn't need to be boring. Peace doesn't need to be uninteresting. We don't need to live our lives on the basis of conflict and strife and pain. Maybe there's a part of you that's been doing that. Maybe there's a part of you that has been focused on trying to get ahead, trying to make ends meet, trying to grab the almighty dollar, trying to move forward in helping get your needs met and get others to help you meet those needs, whatever they are. Free will is the most important spiritual principle that can be taught when it is coupled with love. Therefore, if you can preserve the free will of others and not attempt to manipulate or control them, you are on the positive path of ascension. And yet, even if you treat everyone wonderfully well, if you don't respect and honor yourself, you will still have karmic repercussions. It can still come back to you and hurt you. So let's start creating a new reality. Let's envision now the entire world bathed in this liquid light. Do you see it? Do you see the rising crescendo of beautiful, musical light moving through all the areas of the world that have strife and conflict and pain and disharmony? Do you see people smiling? Do you see the human heart soaring on the wings of love and fire of transformation? The alchemical fire that burns out all the base metals and leaves behind the pure gold of who you are meant to be. I hope you can ride this current of energy with us. All of us who are doing this meditation in our own time and space as we listen to these CDs. And let's move together to a place where the sun rises and sets in harmony, a place of sylvan forests, happy animals storing their acorns in the trees for the winter, making happy little nests. and being able to exist in harmony with us. Harmony with the world. Remember, this is a real technology. You feel the gratitude within yourself and your own DNA unwinds. And one of Dr. Rhine's studies that he was able to duplicate a couple of times was to have a friend of his in Russia unwind DNA that he had in the United States. The energy of love directly inspires DNA and can even inspire DNA to become something altogether new, a new evolution. Look at the way that the frog changed into a salamander. Let it change you. Let it change the earth. Let us envision this change as being peaceful and gradual, a wonderful, uplifting change. A change bringing you closer to your true core identity. Breathe it in and breathe it out. Live the peace you were meant to live. Embrace the sorrows of life for the learning experiences they gave you. Leave behind those pains and bitter memories and embrace truth. Embrace the hope of who you were meant to be. And as you go on, if you listen to the CDs of the readings, including What Is My Purpose, may you find more and more how to answer those questions. Find the truth that is hidden within the mystery of yourself. You may want to continue meditating as our CD ends now, as the music gradually fades. This has been David Wilcock and Larry Sire working with you together to bring about this new world. Peace be with you. We thank you for sharing this time with us and hope to see you again soon. Amen.